Hello, one and all, and welcome to another week here at the Damage Report with me, Johnny DiRola, and surprise Monday guest, Viviana Vigil's back. Viviana, how's it going?
Hello, everyone. Surprise, I'm here.
Surprise, you're good. Jessica's off. It has been. It's been a little bit since we spoke. How have you been handling the transition into fall, the continuation of the pandemic, and all of that?
I am not happy that it's fall, although my birthday is next week, so I'm excited about that. The summer flew by. I'm excited that our COVID numbers are down a bit on the West Coast, at least. So yeah, I'm looking forward to getting my booster shot. I qualify for the booster, so I'll probably be getting that in a couple of weeks. So that'll be my good kickstart to fall, so I continue to be safe. We were talking before on the break before the show about going to the movies. I went to the movies for the first time.
What did you see? So
I saw Venom. It's very cute.
Oh, what'd you think?
I loved it. Hadn't seen the first one, so I don't think it's fully necessary. My 11-year-old nephew was like, "You saw Carnage first, you can't do that." And so I broke the rules, but I enjoyed.
You probably missed so much subtext and everything.
But I think I'll see it again.
Foundation. Yes. Yeah. That's really cool. People were telling me in the pre-show that I have to watch that, and I might. I just have this weird thing where like the non-MCU superhero stuff I'm just not generally into, but I like Tom Hardy, so I will consider it.
Tom Hardy is a good time, I'll be honest. The guy is amazing. Woody Harrelson is amazing, so you really can't go wrong with this. And you know, the effects are great. It's a quick movie. I actually thought of you, John, oddly enough, because I think you will enjoy it. So I think your fans are right. Good.
I will consider it. I've been busying myself recently watching Midnight Mass and Squid Game. SNL is back.
Have you done anything on Damage Report about Squid Game yet?
I've talked about it a little bit. In the pre-show, we just talked about how he wrote it back in 2009, and it took a decade to convince a studio to take a chance on it. Now it's like the most watched Netflix thing ever.
That just gave me chills. So that just gave me chills. I'm loving it. I loved it. My boyfriend's daughters ruined the ending for me, so that's fine.
Well, I don't even know the ending, so
don't.
I will block every person who says anything. Anyway,
okay. Finish it as soon as you can. How's that?
I will. And you know what? While we are actually, shockingly, we're gonna start talking about politics soon. We will be doing a pop culture related top 10 list for tier 2 and tier 3 members on YouTube after the show. Viviana will be stepping in. Thank you very much for doing that, Viviana. And we will be doing our top 10 desert island movies, what we would bring to a desert island. I'm very excited to discuss mine, and we'll have that for you if you're a tier 2 or tier 3 member on YouTube a little bit later on today. Before that though, yes, I'm still a little bit sick. I'm almost done. I swear it's almost gone, but I'm still a little bit sick. If you wouldn't mind hitting the like button, sharing the stream, that'd be great. And if you want to send us tweets, super chats, stuff like that, I am fairly certain we will have those and respond to them. We will see. I don't know what's going on. Oh, thank you, Marissa. I appreciate that. I knew our intern's out today. Anyway, with that said, Viviana, you ready to talk about what took place over the weekend?
I'm ready. I can't hold it any longer.
I will say this, it's a pretty fun rundown, I think. I feel like we have some fun. Some of it's not so much fun, but some of it is. And in fact, John, some of that to start off with.
You always make it fun, John.
I will try to. I will try to. Okay, with that, let's launch directly into this video.
Okay, I'll be back.
Sit down, we want to talk to you real quick. Can we talk to you real quick?
I am heading out.
But right now is a real moment that our people need in order for us to be able to talk about what's really happening. We need a Build Back Better plan right now.
We knocked on doors. We need solutions. The Build Back Better plan has the solutions that we need.
We knocked on doors for you to get you elected. And just how we got you elected, we can get you out of office if you don't support what you promised us.
So what you're seeing there is the beginning of an encounter that unfortunate Senator Kyrsten Sinema had at ASU, where she's a lecturer at the School for Social Work. I just love that. Of all of the things she could be teaching, it's social work. You know, feeling some sort of obligation to right social wrongs and things like that. Anyway, people who actually care about that include Lucha Arizona and members of that group were waiting for her when she came out of her classroom. She immediately booked it for a bathroom, and they followed her in to talk about some of the things they think she is blocking, including immigration reform, a number of other topics. And so Viviana, what do you think about this? She apparently didn't just go back to Arizona for fundraisers and glasses of champagne and hikes and things like that. She was also teaching and they were waiting for her.
Yeah, I'm with you on the teaching. It's like, what is she teaching now? She continually is like the character from SNL we've all been waiting for. Like, she really is a real person, but she looks like a caricature of herself. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm not surprised that people are upset. I'm not surprised that they are coming after her. I'm one of those people that are upset with her. I don't understand how she got into office. And here she is. And it's actually very dangerous to have somebody like her in any position of power. But I'm glad that people are taking a stand. I'm glad that people are speaking up and speaking their mind. So, you know, it's been a tough pill to swallow every single time she talks.
Yeah. Yeah, and I would say, look, there's a lot of different battles that have to happen simultaneously. The most important ones are substantive about the bills that she's blocking, which are all of them, basically, both individually, like with the reconciliation bill, and in a larger sense, since she's standing against reform to the filibuster, she's fine with literally nothing passing the Senate, which sucks. But also, if she is going to be in office, and up until when we can finally kick her out, maybe this is a minor note. You do not get to have this aura of being the cool senator because you happen to be young or because you did a triathlon or something. George Bush likes to ride bikes. He killed like a million Iraqis. I don't give it. I've almost said it. Whew, okay, I don't care about your hobbies. I don't care about your wigs. I don't care about how much you love rosé. You are Joe Manchin. You're Marsha Blackburn. You're all of those people that are standing between people who are suffering and the help that they need. I don't care if you once ran far. But anyway, there is a debate about this particular protest, and we're gonna get into it. First, we're gonna allow the organization, Lucha Arizona, to respond. They said, we wouldn't have to resort to confronting Senator Sinema around Phoenix if she took meetings with the communities that elected her. She's been completely inaccessible. We're sick of the political games. Stop playing with our lives. Build back better. Back the bill. And so, yeah, she doesn't do that. She doesn't do meetings with her constituents. She doesn't answer questions. She is completely closed off, except to her donors. She does meet with them. So, yes, if they have to go to a school, if they have to go to the bathroom, that is their argument for it. What do you think about the particular venue? The fact that they, especially people are have a problem with the fact that they went into the bathroom with her. What do you think about that?
Well, she is full of some of the place to find her. I'll block myself out. She's full of it. So that's where you gotta go, where she's letting it loose. I don't know. She has said that she doesn't want to meet with people. You know, she's in the social work school, but she doesn't want to meet with society. She doesn't want to meet with the people. She only wants to hear people who can line her pockets. And this is the problem with politics that everyone has on the left and the right. This is what the right accuses the left of this elitism and all of this stuff. This is what the left accuses the right of. And then this is people like Sinema and Manchin are right there, smack in the middle, playing both sides and doing a great job of it. I don't know what she has accomplished other than get a lot of press.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think she, yes, for her personally, in terms of actual effect on our politics, she wasn't really sent there to do things. She was sent there to stop things from being done. Remember, it's not like, and I'm saying remember to people who might not be as familiar with politics, you don't need to learn any of these lessons, but it's not like you have hundreds of millions of people who are desperate that have been left behind, and you have wealthy interests, and both of them have been dropped on an island to set up a new government. Which one's gonna win? It's already set up for those people. They don't need to play offense. They just need defense. Defense is their offense, and I find it offensive, actually. So anyway, let's talk now a little bit more about the going into the bathroom. So you had some people who argued against it on social media as strategically undercutting their message. People who I respect, like Josie Duffy Rice, who wrote, imagine the best headline ever. Sinema hides in bathroom for 6 hours to avoid protesters, is startled to find they are still there. That's very funny. You also had people who were more aggressively against it, like, how dare these animal leftists saying that it's sexist because she's a woman, even though I believe the people who went in were women, or at least the vast majority were. Or people trying to flip it, saying, how would you feel if crazed right wingers followed AOC into a bathroom? And that is the sort of thing that it masquerades as adding intellectual consistency and context, but very much is not. I would ask, what are they following her to the bathroom for? If it's Ben Shapiro because he desperately wants to debate her, it's hardly the same thing. They followed Sinema in because she literally will not answer questions anywhere, and she is standing against aid in a massive variety of different forms. They came with substantive concerns. They didn't threaten her or anything like that. They said, these are the things that matter to us. I don't see right-wing protests against AOC taking that form. So let's just bear that in mind. But anyway, what do you think?
I'm not one to go into the bathroom. I think standing outside of the bathroom door would have been sufficient. But I don't blame them. And they are her constituents. She's there to speak to students. She's not speaking to students except for on, you know, on the dais, and that's it. That you need a forum where there's a back and forth. You need to respond to these questions. You need to respond to your constituents. And I don't think that she should be surprised that they're cornering her. Now, personally, would I go into the bathroom? I don't like that. Personally, I don't think that's the right choice. Do I think it's illegal? Is it wrong? You know, to me, it's not the best way to get your message across, but her message is, I don't care what you have to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's just walking past and pushing past them. So, you know, they got it on camera. We know she heard that. We know she's hearing this. So at least it was said. At least we have it, documented at this point, which we hadn't had before.
You know, I'm going to give my take, but before I give my take, let's go to the end of the interaction after she had left the bathroom and she did wash her hands. People were asking in the chat. She then flees to a different location. You'll see that in this little clip.
Will you support the Build Back Better plan so that we can have justice and solutions that we need for immigration, labor,
Okay, that's it. She just went into that room. She's not answering questions because she doesn't feel like she answers to those people, because she doesn't answer to those people. Some of them were actual volunteers for her campaign. They won't be the next time. Yeah. People are starting to learn who she is, and that's an important thing that we can contribute to. But she doesn't give a damn about any of those people. That is very clear. Now, my take on the bathroom thing is, if people with the right substantive positions, whether it's Josie Duffy Rice or people are online or Viviana or whatever, want to debate tactics and optics, let's have it. I think that's perfectly fine. If you stand with Kyrsten Sinema and you don't want the bill to exist, or if it does exist, you want it to be as small as possible, and you start talking about things that are unfair, or should we really be doing this or whatever, screw you, honestly. Like, if you stand with the people in the status quo who are already lording it over all of us, and your fundamental concern is making sure that nothing happens to that status quo that you love so much, I don't want to hear about how comfortable senators are and how we have to maintain that. And I have a little bit more to say that. I do want to give credit to Andrew Lawrence on Twitter, said, it seems like the people whose lives won't change either way think heckling Sinema is bad, and the people whose lives would change for the better think heckling Sinema is good. Exactly. And it's been said a million times before. I will say it one more time. Protest that's only acceptable until it makes powerful people uncomfortable ain't protest that's gonna matter. And think about that. Like, we're not supposed to make her briefly uncomfortable. How comfortable do you think the people are, like in that group, who've had families that have been deported because we haven't had immigration reform and she's standing against it? The people who could have made $15 an hour and are not now, how comfortable are they with their salaries? People who are, you know, burdened by student loan debt, people who desperately need elder care, people who've been sent out of their houses who need COVID aid, all of these things. Why should they be more uncomfortable than their servant? I think that's a much more important question to ask than, is it really fair? Come on, she's trying to teach. Anyway, those are my thoughts.
John, you knocked it out of the park. That is 1,000% on the mark. They need to be uncomfortable. And like I said, personally, would I go into the bathroom? No. But I think when you are a leader.
And I wouldn't follow you there. That's my pledge.
Good. But if you're a leader, you got to expect that people are going to make you uncomfortable. You're going to expect to be heckled. You're going to expect to get a shoe thrown at you. I mean, things are going to happen because you need to answer to these people. And I really don't mind if you're uncomfortable. Personally, I wouldn't do it to you. They didn't hurt her. They didn't attack her. They didn't call her any names. They were speaking to her as calmly as they could. She was completely ignoring them. That's on her. She could have stopped. You know what? I'll speak to you as soon as I get out of the restroom.
Yeah.
She was totally disrespectful to her own people.
She didn't even pretend. Barbara Feinstein pretends better with her constituents.
She patted them on the head. Cinema. Yeah, you don't know what you're talking about. She could have at least said.
Exactly. I mean, look, Feinstein might not remember the interaction 20 minutes later,
let's not go there.
Okay, never mind. Anyway, 90-year-old senators need need to retire. Anyway, what did I say?
Barbara. That's all right.
Oh, I was thinking of Barbara Boxer. I apologize.
Yeah, Barbara Boxer.
Well, she can't remember the name of the Green New Deal. Why should I remember her name? Anyway. With that said, let's turn to other forms of protest on Kyrsten Sinema. And let me just say, Lucha Arizona, thank you. We're going to be reaching out. We'd love to have a member of your organization on.
Sigue luchando.
Thank you. I don't, it sounds good. I don't know what it means. But yes, I'm sure that I agree with the spirit. In any event, let's turn to other modes of protest. Actually, we have a video for you right here.
You bring the moderates and progressives together very easy if you had two more votes. Yeah. Two.
Okay, so that is Joe Biden calling out kind of Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin. I mean, those are the two votes, or at least the two that will identify themselves. Let's never forget that there might be more people behind the scenes. But anyway, that is for Biden. That's brutal.
That was pretty good.
Mentioned that they're against him. For him is something. Thankfully, there are others that are a little bit more aggressive about what they think about Sinema and Manchin and what might happen as a result of it. Let me demonstrate that in a few ways. The first is this video of Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Someone who famously came to office having primaried an out of touch conservative Democrat from the left. Should Sinema now be worried about a primary challenge come 2024? Do you think that needs to be talked about more as a way of reminding her that the pressure is on in an increasingly bluish state, Arizona?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think ultimately that is always up to the folks right there in the state of Arizona. Are they happy with their leadership? You know, their most recent senator that they had just elected is more progressive, fights very hard for working families. But that is ultimately up to the people of Arizona. It is a state that is increasingly Latino and Latina. It is a state where indigenous people really just showed up and organized in incredible, remarkable ways for the presidential election. It is a place where working class populist politics is really taking off. And I think that, you know, if you're home in Arizona, it's a question that you may want to raise.
I love about that, John, is, you know, what she's so right. The Southwest is really waking up, you know, really still in many ways, the United States is still under colonialism and the powers of colonialism and of oppression of people of color and native people, specifically in those states. And the more we learn, the more we are empowered about who we are, where we come from, our backgrounds, the more that the politics are going to start to change. And I see that happening not only in Arizona, New Mexico, it's happening, Texas, it's happening. We're seeing it happen all over the Southwest. And Arizona was a hard red state. Sinema, no one goes to the cinema in Arizona. Let's just say that. They go to the movies.
That's going to be in a political ad someday. I don't know if it'll be effective, but I like it. No one goes to the cinema, man. Okay, that's good. Look, I like the tack of AOC there. It's not too aggressive, but she's right. Look, I don't know substantively. Again, we're gonna have to evaluate how likely she is to be primary and how effective it might be. There are polls showing 2/3 of Arizona Democrats would support a primary challenge if they might not individually support whoever that is. That was back in July, bear in mind. I can't imagine she's more popular now than she was in July. So just bear that in mind. She's way less popular than other Democrats. Democrats in Arizona, she has a net plus 23 approval rating among Democrats. The other senator is 53 points more positive. Biden's plus 89. So way more popular than Sinema in her own state. So bear that in mind. But we'll have to see if a protest or if a primary actually comes. I certainly hope that it does.
I find it funny that the two that are really standing in the way, Sinema and Manchin, they have these names, you know, Sinema, and then I've already made the correlation of Manchin and a mansion. Mm-hmm. Like, do they change their names to be a little bit more hoity-toity? Like, are they really trying to be with the one percenters? Like, what's going on with these two? I don't know. They come from money.
The attempts to combine their names, like Cinemansion, Mancina. I'm not loving them necessarily, but anyway.
I would be embarrassed if I was Manchin to be associated with Sinema. I mean, they're both equally vile in their own way, but she's just like a caricature. I just can't.
I think they could both do better, honestly. Yeah. Anyway, so the pressure continues in other forms too. Pramila Jayapal, after a good week of keeping the Progressive Caucus unified, and they did what they said they would do, continued with that over the weekend, saying that the $1.5 trillion figure for the economic bill was too small. She wouldn't say whether she would accept a $2.1 trillion price tag, which scares me quite a bit. Anyway, but she said that's not going to happen on the 1.5. That's too small to get our priorities in. It's going to be somewhere between 1.5 and 3.5. And I think the White House is working on that right now, because remember, what we want to do is deliver childcare, paid leave, climate change, housing. There's a lot of priorities. I don't want to see between 1.5 and 3.5 personally. Let's keep that lower figure way higher. Yeah. But
we have so much to do. It's really upsetting, especially in the wake of this economic crisis with COVID. I mean, we need this infrastructure. We need this stuff passed. We need childcare. We need all this stuff happening. And we haven't even seen the effects of it yet. So if we don't get this passed, next year, it's going to be real rough times for a lot of families.
Yeah, and when you look at how long it's taken to pass this, are they literally going to pass zero bills next year? It feels like that might happen. We'll have to see. I guess they get their reconciliation bill next year. We'll see what they do with that in the month before an election. I'm sure they'll be quite bold.
They'll go on vacation. Anyway,
yeah, probably. Well, she certainly will, whether they do or not. Now, I also want to talk a little bit briefly about the popular conception of Manchin and Sinema, what they think about them, because there has for a long time been a lot of free PR, just sort of ambient social PR for moderates and centrists. I would take both of those words, bundle them up, throw them in the sun. But anyway, that is cracking a little bit. Don Lemon had his little thing with Chris Cuomo calling them Republicans in the Democratic Party. I like that for Don Lemon to say that. I think that's good.
Pretty good.
Over the weekend, John Oliver did a great segment on the two of them. I'm a big fan of John Oliver. I don't like that he called them moderates. I think he needs to wake up to that being a complete fiction. But I'm glad that he's pushing back. Whether they kill this bill or not, let's not let them get through this year without everyone in their state knowing who they are. And even SNL, as I predicted earlier that day, you did have Kyrsten Sinema. Cecily Strong did a great Kyrsten Sinema.
Great.
If I could critique, and I know most of you come here for a comedy critique from me, they went with the like agent of chaos angle, which Cecily Strong plays very well. She did the same thing with her Tulsi Gabbard a couple years ago. They didn't talk about why she's doing it, which is because she's there for the donors. Yeah. There was no corruption. There was no donors. It was just, I don't need to have friends. And it was very well acted, but substantively I had an issue with it. And I continue to hate their portrayal of AOC. But anyway, I hope that the tide is turning, Viviana. I hope that people know who they are and they can see past.
I think that's an important point though, John, about SNL, because I think it really, and then you're talking about, you know, just media in general and how they're painting this picture, but we have to keep in mind who's behind SNL, who's behind all of these shows. And so the whole Democratic Party is full of moderate. So what's Sinema? She's not a moderate. You know, they're all moderate. You know, AOC's the left, and she's actually probably, you know, her and Bernie are what Democrats should be. So they're not gonna be too hard on them. They're gonna make fun of them because it's fun. But substantive, they're not gonna go there. They're not gonna go there because people don't wanna hear it. And people don't really know all that you know, John. And they're not gonna, they just want the surface fluff. And that's kind of probably why we've gotten into this mess with Facebook and social media, is people only want the surface. Yeah. And we need to be substantive. We need to get down in the dirts. In the dirts, in the roots. In the dirt, in the roots.
There's multiple dirts. But anyway, and that's not, if Cecily Strong is watching this, and I hope to God she is, it's not a critique of you. Great performance.
No, but you know, comedians say that. They she does a great job and she's hilarious, but like they're gonna say, well, my job's not to educate people on the blah, 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 whatever.
Well, and also I doubt she wrote the sketch. Like I'm sure she was, that's what I'm saying. Anyway, with that, we're gonna take a break. When we come back, we're gonna have a little bit more on this for two reasons. One, it's fun. And two, it's the most important policy thing that's happening right now. We're gonna have the defenders of Manchin and Sinema. We're gonna give them their day in court after this. Someone says, Bama Raider says, come on, John, think of your constituents, new intro. Exactly. I'm about as
responsible. Follow you in the bathroom, John. You better change that intro.
Exactly. Build the intro. Anyway, thank you, everybody, for being here. We've got a little bit more on the moderates. They have their defenders, as you'll see in this video.
In Sinema and Joe Manchin, they're the two Democrats who are holding up, and they're mad at them because they're not progressive enough, forgetting that they only got elected because they're not progressive, because they're moderates. Here's my question. Does spending more money make you a better person or a bigger moderate? And maybe these two, Sinema and Manchin, do they might have their thumb more on the pulse of the average Democrat in the country?
Okay. So that is Bill Maher, who I'm sure if you hooked him up to a lie detector and you asked him, like, you're a progressive, right? He would say that he is. But yeah. I will ask you to watch the show and see if you can maintain.
He's been a Republican for 10 years, John. This guy.
I think he's like Manchin Sinema. I think he's a conservative Democrat. I think that a lot has changed since the 90s. I think that he has changed. I think more importantly, the country has changed. Yep. And that's fine, but recognize what you are. That's all I would expect out of a show like that. But he does like Manchin Sinema, apparently.
Yeah, he's been wrong for a long time. I stopped watching him a long time ago. The guy has a very bad reputation. I won't say too much, but he's not the nicest guy, according to people that have been close to him, and his politics are very with the wind. And you know, I honestly think he's more libertarian.
Yeah, yeah. I think a lot of rich people are. They get the money, they want to keep it. That makes sense.
Why don't you just take care of yourself? What's wrong with that?
Exactly. No, but the issue isn't just that maybe he's not a leftist. So I want you to play back what he said. Think like this job. I will acknowledge. Is a lot easier than most jobs. It has very little that's expected of you. But one thing that is expected is that you think the bare minimum about the things that you say and add something to the discourse. That is ideally what you should do. He said they think it's too much money. Is that really what they think? They have like, they have accountants issues with it? That's not, like that's a version of what's true. But again, they're delivering for their donors. He knows about money in politics, but he completely forgets it on his show. He says, does spending more money really make you more moral? That's where we just get into, that's just a conservative, I don't want the government to spend money because it might result in taxes thing. So he is expressing his own self-interest, his own financial self-interest, and not identifying it there. He's just a rich guy, basically, but he won't say that. And then he says, they only got elected because they're moderates. Is that how Kyrsten Sinema got elected? Because she pretended to be a progressive, she pretended to be a leftist, she played up being in the Green Party formerly and stuff like that. She wouldn't have you believe that's why she got elected. And then finally, is it possible they have more of a finger on the pulse of the country? I don't know, Google a poll, Bill Maher. The bill that they're opposing has at least 2/3, if not 3/4 public approval. This is not a hypothetical. No. Polling exists. We can find out what the people actually think about this stuff. But again, this guy that gets paid millions of dollars to understand politics and discuss it online It's just all hypothetical. Who's to say what's popular? Maybe what lines up with my own interests is popular. Wouldn't that be a nice world to live in?
He has mentioned before that he's rich and he recognizes, you know, paying taxes and he could be against this and that. I've heard him say it, but you know, and in some ways for me is, were they elected because they're moderate? Not by the constituent. They were elected, being moderate was a fan because of the donors and because of the money flow. And this is what we need to get away from. And that's what he should be talking about. The fact that money is even taking a place in why we're voting for people. That is the problem with politics in this country. And he should have been identifying it in that way and not like, is it so wrong? Is capitalism so bad? Is it always bad? You know, he's in that zone when he really should be saying, wait a minute, we're going down this really bad path where money is making the decisions and that's what needs to stop. And like you said, he's too much, he's, this guy's done. He needs to be retired. He hasn't been on point.
Just enjoy your mansions. Go on a yacht and
go to mansion and you guys go to the cinema with cinema.
Yeah, and even like you could add something. And look, I'm gonna criticize, I said earlier in the show, I wish John Oliver had done this. When you say they got elected because they're moderates, okay, in the case of Joe Manchin, you might have an argument there. You talk to some poor people in West Virginia and they do use that terminology, but why? Like there is a conversation to be had about the like cumulative effect of decades of media telling people that a certain type of bipartisanship is good and necessary, that moderate means one thing when you can literally be a moderate Republican or a moderate Democrat that believe like starkly opposite things. You could actually try to deconstruct why so many Americans vote against their own economic interests. You could do that, but he doesn't do that.
No. That's anyway, what he should be doing. You're exactly right. That's what that conversation, that's what your monologue should have been, bro. What are you doing over here? He's just dialing it in. He has been for a while. And I foresee that show ending soon, personally.
Yeah, and if people love moderates so much, why is such a high percentage of their donations come from corporate PACs and things like that? Why are regular people lining up?
That's who loves the moderate, so.
Yeah, that's true. Well, look, for Manchin and Sinema, Bill Maher might be one of their most high profile supporters, but he's not the only one. And if you can judge people by the company they keep, here are a couple of other people defending them recently. One is, wait, Stephen Miller? Yep. He tweeted, an illegal alien is stalking a US senator, this is the bathroom thing, to demand passage of Biden's reconciliation bill because it includes mass amnesty for illegals. In a functioning democracy, ICE would swiftly deport this person, but under Biden's new edict, as the lawbreaker knows, she's immune from removal. So he thinks it's unfair that this illegal is bothering a senator. And if it was up to him, and unfortunately for years it was, that protester would have been immediately deported from the country. So that's a nice buddy for you, Sinema.
Yeah, that's someone you want to be standing on the same team with on Squid Game.
Exactly. Yeah, if only so you can get behind them and push them off something. But anyway, we do have one continued supporter of Kyrsten Sinema. This is not new, but Meghan McCain, big fan. Described the protesters. Oh, so right there you see that this is what we've shown this previously. This is from like a week ago. It's just Kyrsten Sinema appreciation tweet from Meghan McCain. That's all. That's it. And a stupid gif of some cacti. Anyway, she called the protesters following her into the bathroom, quote, as toxically intolerant as the Trump regime. Yeah, I mean, if you told me we're gonna deport everyone that you know, ban an entire religion, or follow you to the bathroom, I wouldn't know which to pick. They're equally toxic.
Wow.
But anyway, and in terms of like, if we have a theme of people who should be willing to look a little bit deeper into politics, and that's what they're paid to do, but they don't do it anyway. She had previously tweeted in support of Kyrsten Sinema back in June of this year. Same journalists and pundits who go out of their way to bring up my dad and applaud him for his maverick ways are sure spending a lot of energy ripping apart and defaming Kyrsten Sinema for being a maverick against her own party. No attempt at intellectual consistency anywhere.
She said maverick. She's a maverick.
She's a maverick. So that's critique or context for people with perfectly spherical smooth brains. Maybe there's something other than being a maverick that we're differentiating. maybe if your dad doesn't go along with defunding the ACA, which is a popular and necessary policy, that time he was a maverick is a good thing. When she stands against wildly popular legislation that the president got into office campaigning on, that's not as good a time of being a maverick.
That's my thing.
Just being a renegade, that is such big brain stupidity.
What makes you a maverick is having the integrity behind it. This woman has no integrity. She doesn't believe in anything. Whoever gives her money, that's what she says. That's not a maverick, that's a mouthpiece. And Meghan McCain has her hair combed far too back, and I got too excited, John. Meghan McCain's hair is slicked back so far; they have smoothed out the wrinkles in her brain. Oh, I can't with that woman either. I'm not surprised that they're friends; they would get along famously.
I'm sure that they do. They probably go to the same wine mixers and things like that. But anyway, finally, one more tweet.
Rosé all day.
Rosé all day. That's no policy considerations, just vibes. Anyway, if you are watching this and you like cinema, first of all, why? Second of all, I want you to understand that Meghan McCain being her friend isn't like this awesome alliance of mavericks. Okay? No. She retweeted this tweet from Comfortably Smug that says, "Felt cute, might delete Biden's agenda later," retweeting a photo of cinema. So I want you to understand what the goal is. Yes. Meghan McCain might have criticized Trump on a couple of the surface level things. She wants Biden to fail and not accomplish anything because, like Bill Maher, Meghan McCain is just a rich person. That's all she is. I don't care about her policies beyond that. Her loyalty is to her class, and her class is situated above us.
I'll go as far to say that she's not even on Bill Maher's level, because at least Bill Maher earned where he's at. She's just the daughter of a politician. So sorry, you didn't do anything to get where you are. You didn't earn any of it. You just sat there, and I won't even say looked pretty, but I guess that's part of it.
Feel free.
Subjectively.
Subjectively. Okay. Okay. You know what? We are going to take a break to like at a wine tasting, get the taste of that out of our mouth. And so we're gonna take a break. When we come back, we're gonna be talking about the Pandora Papers leaks. As well as a whole bunch of fun stuff. So stick around, we'll be back in a minute. Okay, everybody. I'm very glad that my throat decided to give out as we launch into the most graphics and reading heavy segment.
Let me know if you need me to pick up any slack, John.
You want to read them? You can read them. How about this? So you got the dog open?
Yes, I do.
Did you see where it says some specifics?
Pull it up.
At some point, I'm going to throw to you to start giving us some specifics. I'd appreciate that.
Yeah, I got it. I'm ready.
But with that said, let's launch into this thing. In the wake of things like the Panama Papers and others, we have the Pandora Papers investigation, what's called the world's largest ever journalistic collaboration involving more than 600 journalists from 150 media outlets in 117 countries. A lot of interesting stuff has come about as a result of this. The first and foremost is I'm shocked to find out there are still 600 journalists. So good news for us to start off the week with. But also it revealed a lot of the financial shenanigans of our world's elites, both on the financial side as well as the ruling class of a number of different countries. So they've got details on more than 29,000 offshore bank accounts, over twice the number that were exposed 5 years ago by the Panama Papers. I will just remind you, by the way, that while the Panama Papers obviously revealed a lot financially, it also revealed the strike back against journalism. Google some of the violence against people involved in the Panama Papers leaks. So if you are one of those 600 journalists, stay safe, because these people have a lot of money and a lot of power, and they don't like when these things are revealed. But the investigation exposes the secret offshore affairs of 35 world leaders. That is amazing. Current and former presidents, prime ministers, and heads of state, as well as the secret finances of more than 300 other public officials, like government ministers, judges, mayors, and military generals in more than 90 countries, as well as more than 100 billionaires that feature, which includes celebrities, rock stars, and business leaders. Many using shell companies to hold luxury items like property and yachts. Hey, Joe Manchin, as well as incognito bank accounts, even art like looted Cambodian antiquities to paintings by Picasso and murals by Banksy. So hey, some modern stuff there. So Viviana, if you have any thoughts about the investigation finally being revealed, feel free to let us know. And at some point, if you want to let us know some of the specifics, I'd love to hear them.
I mean, I'm with you with those journalists. I mean, God bless them. That's really scary that they're putting themselves out there. But sorry for the sirens.
They're coming for the journalists.
Cue the sirens. Some specifics are King Abdullah II, who rules Jordan. He spent more than $100 million on lavish properties in the US, who's his realtor, and in Europe, while his country fell deeper into political turmoil. The Washington Post reported that.
Let's start there. Mm-hmm. So, and the reason is what he's doing with it, which is buying up all this property. And look, this is like the barest surface of these papers. You can find out much more online and more will be coming out. But this is one of the things that I expect is setting Anna Kasparian's hair on fire today, which is a lot of it is real estate speculation and hoarding of property in the United States. That is a problem that we've been talking about for some time. This is not the only thing that's leading to it, but this is one of these. These are wealthy elites hiding their wealth in other countries by buying up property here. And if there's a consequence that you can't ever buy a home as a result of that, well, you know, omelets, eggs, all of that.
Yeah, too bad that's the case. Also, a woman suspected of being in a years-long relationship with Russian President Vladimir Putin became the owner of a pricey Monaco apartment just days after reportedly giving birth to his child. Coincidence? Ukrainian president.
The nice feather in her cap.
I wouldn't want to get that feather. The Ukrainian president Volodymyr, I can't say that one, Volodymyr Zelensky, I say it, John.
Volodymyr Zelensky. I think.
Zelensky, yeah. Who was elected in 2019 on a pledge to clean up his country's notoriously corrupt and oligarch-influenced economy, is also named in the leak. During the campaign, Zelensky transferred 25% of his stake in an offshore company to a close friend who now works as the president's top advisor. The file suggests.
That's probably a gift. He's probably just giving him a nice gift for
just
all
25% of the stake.
It's like that's a gift card to Chili's. Yeah. You just, you know, it's like, hey, job well done. You know,
this one really hurt, John. In Kenya, the president Uhuru Kenyatta, he's portrayed himself as the enemy of corruption. In 2018, Kenyatta told the BBC that every public servant's assets must be declared publicly so that people can question and ask what is legitimate. Well, according to the ICIJ, Kenyatta's family has been accumulating a fortune in offshore tax havens for decades. And the Pandora papers show the family owned at least 7 entities based in the British Virgin Islands and in Panama, 2 well-known tax havens, of course. And the ICIJ said that the offshore businesses have assets worth more than $30 million.
Well, I mean, here's the thing about corruption. The reason you have corruption is because there's a temptation to make money. If you take all of the money and you send it to an offshore bank account, there will be no temptation left for the elites in your country. I guess that's the strategy. But that's, look, that is very much one of the things. I'm so glad that world leaders are included in this. They are, not all of them claim to be fighters of corruption, although you have Zelensky and you have Kenyatta. Hopefully the people in their country get that message. Unfortunately, many of them live in countries that don't have free and fair elections. So even if they know what the leaders are up to, they can't necessarily do anything about it. Others like Putin, they ain't claiming to be anything other than what they are. But like when you just have Putin's kid and you get a Monaco apartment, and I read assets worth $100 million. Yeah. Just this mistress got. Like you think about how much money they have and how free they are with it. Like we don't have all the details, but I have read that there's beliefs that Putin might well be the richest person in the world, but much of it hidden. There's a lot of that going around in a lot of different countries spread across the world. One thing I noticed though, and I don't know if you noticed this, where is the US people?
Yeah, they're hidden.
We got all these celebrities, we got these leaders. Where are they? Now there's speculation. If we want to jump ahead of the last graphic just for a second, there's speculation that because we have such low tax rates here and there's so many loopholes, they don't really need to use tax havens to the same extent because the US is basically a tax haven. That's part of it, but there's a lot of, other than just the tax havens, there's a lot of shady behavior that definitely our billionaires are engaging in. And it just seems like these leaks often don't touch that. I find that very frustrating.
It might have something to do with the fear that the journalists have, you know, and it might be who's really spurring this Pandora Papers. You know, maybe it's coming from inside the House and we want to point our finger elsewhere so that we can look like we're okay over here in the USA. Yeah, it's a lot of stuff, John. Shall I continue?
Yeah, you want to read at least the UK one, yeah.
Okay, so former UK Prime Minister Tony Blair and his wife, Cherie Blair, they avoided paying $312,000, I guess that's $423,000 US money in stamp duty, a tax on property purchases, when they bought a townhouse in London. The BBC reported that. The building now houses Cherie Blair's law firm. So they, you know, went ahead and did that tax-free.
That's nice.
That's okay.
A lot of perks when you're wealthy.
London, but that's nice.
I just love what they can get away with these monument, like the entire like budget of some countries in these transactions.
Can I just say that $423,000 for a townhouse sounds actually like a really good deal. Like, do I need to move to London? Like, that sounds like I could maybe live there.
I don't know what the exchange rate is these days.
No, that was the exchange.
That actually sounds pretty in London.
That's what I'm saying. Is this accurate? Or maybe it was, I don't know if these are the right numbers, but.
Saddle up, Governor. John's going to the island.
Pip, pip, let's go.
Pip, pip, hooray, or whatever. Yes, I'm going to have to do that. Anyway, look, we're going to be talking more about this on the main show today, and there is way more to be revealed from this, but I hope that you look into it. Super significant. These sorts of revelations are always an opportunity for us to actually do something to change the laws. We basically always get through these without that actually happening, but you never know. Maybe this will be the time that the US at the least changes its laws, which contribute to a lot of this. That said, production team, to close out the hour, I don't know if you saw my message, but if we could skip to the E block, that's good. Okay, we can do that. Then let's jump into the video.
Well, so working the Cabbage Patch Factory.
So no wonder Dr. Fauci's about to cancel Christmas. We're not going to have any presents anyway, so it's going to really work out. Well, by the way, let's just clamp down on those college
students. Dr. Seuss with the Grinch.
Right.
Dr. Fauci.
Right.
Dr. Seuss, not a real doctor, but he does seem smart.
And he was canceled.
Right.
Okay, so I made you watch that video because I had to watch that video. It is 16 seconds long, and I think they use 16 stupid baby brain buzzwords. They just fit in everything. I don't think they said critical race theory or trans athletes, but maybe in the next couple of seconds they fit it in. So Fauci stole Christmas, something, something, Dr. Seuss, there's no presents. The war on Christmas has begun. Like pumpkin spice lattes, it just comes earlier every year. It's the first week of October and they're talking about the war on Christmas, Viviana. And not just them, Newsmax is doing it too.
I think I need to start watching that show because that made me laugh out loud. Dr. Seuss was canceled, don't forget.
He wasn't canceled. The publisher decided for purely financial reasons to stop selling books that I guarantee no one here has heard of.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's a lot of nonsense going around. That's 16 seconds. We're gonna give you a slightly longer video in a second. I just want you to think, if you watched hours of Fox every day, how do you maintain a brain in a mostly solid state when you listen to stuff like that, or you listen to stuff like this from Marsha Blackburn?
Maria, we know that the Build Back Better agenda has become the Biden Build Back Broke agenda. And the American people have figured out that what they're trying to do is institutionalize socialism. They're trying to do a takeover of the country in one vote. They want government control of your kids. They want to look at your bank account for every transaction over $600. Anything that you do on Venmo and PayPal, they want a part of that transaction. They want government control of health care. They want to demoralize the military, close the churches, destroy your faith in the American system. And then here they're going to come with the socialist program to run your life from cradle to grave, daylight to dark.
Unbelievable.
They're going to punt your puppy. They're going to eat your cereal. They're going to do all those things, really. I thought Biden was sleepy. Anyway, super quick final thoughts.
Oh man, I didn't know they were going to rip my faith out of my chest. That's crazy. Who knows?
They're literally closing down the churches in the same bill that institutionalized socialism. It's a lot. So
people are believing this, though. It's scary. Go ahead, John. Right. Sorry.
Do millions, unfortunately, believe it. And that's, you watch that for a few hours, you too can become a crazy person.
Yeah.
Anyway, unfortunately, that is all the time that we have for our first hour. Thank you, everybody who joined us on our linear platforms. If you are on Twitch or on YouTube, members app, all that stuff, we got way more coming, including Trump launching the first attack against Ron DeSantis. We've got Karens, we've got a bunch of stuff. You're not gonna wanna miss it. We'll be back after a short break. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.